Good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's board meeting. We have a quorum. We have everybody here. So we'll start with the agenda. Are there any members who would like to change the order of items on the agenda?
Yes, this is Walt Millar.
Yes, Mr. Millar.
Hey, Jim, if I could move 9.03 up at the top of the discussion agenda. It's pretty late back here, and I've got commitments in the morning, and I just want to ask a couple of questions regarding that item.
That would be the Avila School CCNR?
Yes.
Yes. Is there any objection to moving that to the top of the that's in the
and the discussion agenda.
Yeah, on the discussion agenda. So you just want to move that,
Mr. Quisenberry,
before the LCAP? Is that correct?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yes.
That item requires our attorney to be present. I don't know. Is he here? Okay.
I see him right back there.
That's probably a reason to move up even higher.
Okay. All right. Are there any objections to that change in the agenda? Okay, seeing none. Okay, we'll make that adjustment, Mr. Millar. All right. Having made that adjustment, is the agenda is fine with everyone. Is that correct? Okay, so we'll move on. We need approval of the minutes of the November 19th meeting are presented for your approval, and may I have a motion to adopt?
I move approval of the minutes of November 19th, 2013.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, there's been a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and a second by Mark. And
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I needed to clarify, and I don't think I gave you these instructions earlier. Because we have Mr. Millar on teleconference tonight, all your votes while he is attending this portion of the meeting must be by roll call.
By roll call. Okay, so we'll do it that way then. So there is a motion, and there is a second for the approval of the minutes. Roll call vote.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger? Mr. Buckman? And Mr. Millar?
Yeah.
Passes 6 with 1 abstention. Thank you.
All right. So we will move on to item 3.01. We have student representatives today, or a student representative. We have Scott. Would you please let us know what's happening at San Luis High School?
Thank you. Thank you. So we are 3 weeks into our second trimester. Winter sports have officially started. Girls soccer is undefeated, and they're doing fantastic. Watched them out there today against Lompoc. We did, before Thanksgiving break, a Philippines Miracle Minute for those affected by the Typhoon Haiyan. And it was really a quick turnaround from the event happening and us trying to do something, you know, to help out those who were hurt by the typhoon. So we did a Miracle Minute. And it took about 2 days to set it up, and we raised over $750 to donate to the Red Cross Disaster Relief. And for responding so quickly, it was a very excellent output from the students. Next, we had AIDS Awareness Week last week, where we ran activities throughout the week, had information every day, had a guest speaker from the AIDS Support Network, and we also took a human red ribbon picture out on the practice field, which was really, really cool. We had three organizations in the Christmas parade, which was very exciting. We had FFA, International Club, and Band. Back to school night was last week, and it was the first ever back to school night for trimester two. Mr. O'Connor put it on. He did a great job, and the teachers were very, very excited, and so were the parents. We had close to 300 parents, mostly freshmen and sophomore parents, which is really good because those are the newer parents at the high school. We were having a blood drive the 13th of December, which is this week. A lot of sign-ups. We're going to have a huge turnout, which is awesome. And last year we did one blood drive. This year we're going to do two. So this is our first one. Student Congress is next week on Wednesday. Fantastic, as always. We have open mic next Thursday at lunch. Next week is also our last week before we go to holiday break. So we are trying to do a themed week of Give Joy, Get Joy. to do something for the community. So we're planning to do a canned food drive, a jacket and blanket drive, and when students bring in something, we give them something in return, like hot chocolate on the cold day or hot cider. So it's a really good idea. One of our students in ASB had it, and we're just running with it. We're also going to try to do a spirit day on that Friday, just to do something fun, like an ugly sweater day or a holiday hat day, something very festive. Tonight, our Slow High Jazz Band is performing at Madonna. This Thursday, our Slow High Band is performing with Laguna's Band at Laguna, 7 o'clock. It's their winter band performance. That's really cool when the bands work together, the middle schoolers and the high schoolers. And also next Thursday, the Slow High Choir and the Laguna Choir is going to be putting on a winter choir concert. And that about wraps it up. We have some other stuff that's going to be shown tonight. TNN, FFA, both fantastic. Thank you for having me once again.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Where is the choir concert, Scott?
Where is the choir concert, Mr. O'Connor?
Oh.
Thank you. United Methodist Church on Johnson, 7 p.m. next Thursday, Slow High in the Laguna Choir.
And the band concert was Wednesday at the middle school?
This Thursday at Laguna,
okay.
7 o'clock.
Thank you.
And then if you think you can make it, which you guys probably can't, the jazz band tonight at Madonna, 7 o'clock.
Thank you very much. And, we appreciate your participation in our meeting. You're welcome to stay through and our whole agenda and provide your insight on any topic, but we recognize that you may have other obligations, and so you may leave whenever you need to. Okay, thank you. Next up is San Luis High School Student Awards, Principal O'Connor.
Thank you. Which button I push here? It's on. Thank you. First of all, thank you. I believe... Thanks, Riley. thank you guys for having us here this evening. It gives us a great opportunity to present some of our student achievements that we have. Before we bring up some of our students, I'd like to introduce one of our fantastic art teachers who's here, and she's going to talk about our memory project that she does in class, and that's Miss Deborah Sands.
Hi, I'm Deborah Sands. I'm one of the art teachers at Slow High School, and I'm going to talk to you about a memory project that I've been working on for maybe the last 5 years. Oh, actually, I'm going to turn the lights down. Those first two would be good. Okay, thanks. Diagram. I've actually brought projects here for you to see today, and they're posted on the back wall, where you can actually see copies of my students' artwork, as well as the children receiving the artwork. Kids in orphanages rarely receive gifts, especially one as unique as a portrait. These orphanages often house children of all ages. They could be 18 years old still. For young children, the portraits will serve as valuable keepsakes all through their life. Resilience is pretty powerful. Some of these children that are brought to the orphanages, they've been neglected, abused, abandoned, but they still emanate hope. They strive freely for happiness. This project is pretty cool because it's about the celebration of life through artwork. Engagement. I've never seen the kids more excited about a project. They're really engaged in their artwork. Portraiture is one of the lessons, so it's part of my curriculum as it is. And through this, I've been able to do a portraiture project while performing a service to the children who are going to receive the portraits. Teachers can take the project to the next level and engage students in learning about the country, the culture of the children. I'll let you read this one. This was the country we went to in March. So students in drawing 2 were paired with children from Guyana. Through a photograph, students were able to come face to face with someone from across the world. We live in a culture that's so saturated with images, it was really difficult for some of the students to imagine that only a few of these kids had ever had likenesses captured. How many of you have taken a selfie with your cell phone? I know you guys have. These children live in a rural region that is struggling with intense poverty. Most of the kids don't have photos of themselves. We gave them something even more unique, artistic portraits created just for them. We created a memory of their childhood. Here's a few of the students receiving the portraits that my students drew for them. So sweet. Look at that face. Students wanted to participate. They said this was one of the most moving experiences they've ever had. Some of the kids who are not even going to take my class this year, they've asked to participate again this year. Over the last 5 years, we've traveled, so to speak, to Ecuador, Thailand, Burma, Vietnam, and Guyana, and Africa. Everyone has a different story. The Memory Project's aim is to create portraits for children anywhere in the world that have faced substantial hardships and have few personal keepsakes of their own. This project stays with the students long after class ends. It's pretty cool. Let me show you a short clip of the project and of Ben, actually, in Ecuador last year.
Hi, my name is Ben Schumacher. I'm the guy who coordinates the Memory Project. And we're standing here in my garage, which basically is, has become the Memory Project's international headquarters office. This is where we have shelves and we receive all of these portraits that you art students create for kids in the program.
Muchas gracias y por hacer las fotos, están bien bonitos, como hicieron, como pintaron, hicieron bien bonito.
Agradezco al grupo de jóvenes que vino a la Fundación Laura Vicuña a retratar a las niñas, luego pintaron y enviaron, ahorita están entregando los retratos muy bonitos, muchas gracias. Felicitaciones por ser artistas y sigan adelante. A nosotros nos hace mucho bien, a las niñas más bien todavía, porque mejoran su autoestima, suben la autoestima, se sienten contentas, se sienten tomadas en cuenta por otras personas de la sociedad. Muy amables a todos y sigan viniendo. Gracias.
All right, guys, I just want to give you an update. We've been to about half the orphanages so far, and the kids are just loving the artwork. They're crowded around each other, looking at...
Hola.
That we have now visited 20 orphanages. We've delivered all of the portraits that you created, and it went really well. There were two moments I wanted to share with you in particular. One was when we were at an orphanage for young kids that actually does a lot with adoptions. We visited several orphanages that do a lot with adoptions, and in some cases, about half of the kids that we had portraits for had been adopted. So what's really cool about that is that your portraits for those kids are going to their new families. They're going to the one of her caretakers brought her the artwork, and there she was looking at her portrait. And the caretaker told me that that portrait actually brought a great deal of comfort to her the night before her surgery. And she did definitely survive, and she's doing well recovering right now. So those are just a couple ways in which, you know, your portraits are really powerful, and no doubt there are countless others that perhaps we'll never even know about. So I just want to say thank you so much to all of you, and the kids have really loved what you've created for them, and hopefully we'll have all your schools involved again next year.
Art Club, we only did 9 students, and the students raised the money to help donate towards this organization. And now, the last 2 years, I've gotten Teach Grants, so thank you for that. And now I can do it for a whole class, 25 to 30 kids. So it's been great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a wonderful project. Principal O'Connor.
Yes, thank you. Our next presenter, we often hear from Scott about TNN. TNN is our newscast that gives all of our bulletin updates across our campus. It's something that we've really promoted this year. The staff at that staffs the TNN are all students. It's all run by the students, and a lot of the cameras and the equipment has been bought through PEG funds. So I wanted to let Cherie Jones tell you a very brief presentation about TNN.
Good evening, everyone. I'm glad to be here to talk about something really exciting that's happening this year at San Luis High School, and that is a video bulletin. And the group that is broadcasting the bulletin is TNN Tiger News Network. What's happening is that it's a group of students, and each student, just to give you a little preface to the video that I have for you, each student was given a beat. We learned that term at KSBY yesterday. I have some students doing the world news beat, and then some are doing the sports beat, and then we have students doing around campus kind of beats and club beat. And now we're kind of venturing into weather, and we have a couple girls who are going to start doing weather in front of the green screen, and we're going to start doing our sportscasts in front of the green screen also. So we're evolving, and so we're really excited. One of the unexpected outcomes to doing a video bulletin is the students are actually paying attention to it. So we're really excited about that, and what I hear, and I'm not out there in the classrooms, is that it's really quiet, and they're watching it. So and we're evolving and we're trying to bring in more graphics. And what I've put together for you today is we're recording at the same time, but what I've done is taken bits and pieces of different recordings over the past few weeks and put it together so you can kind of see a little bit of everything that we've been doing. And also behind the scenes. So in the control room, you'll be able to see what the students are doing. I would like to thank Leslie for supporting us. It's been, it took a while to get the stream to stream smoothly. And I also want to thank a community member who has been donating countless hours to helping me get the new system that we purchased this summer up and running. And his name is Joe Emenecker. He is a technician. He also works at Cal Poly as a technician. And he's also been donating equipment to just trying to get it all to work. And I also would like to thank our IST. They've been helping us with the stream, and we're now multicasting. So it's going smoothly over the last couple of weeks, and you'll get a little taste of what's going on right now.
I'm Deep Mystery.
And I'm Dee Strick.
Good morning, Tigers. I'm Noah.
And I'm Maddie.
Good morning, Tigers. I'm Deep Mystery.
And I'm Maddie. Welcome to the TNN broadcast for Monday, November 25th. On this day in 1783, nearly 3 months after the Treaty of Paris was signed,
December 3rd, 1967, 53-year-old Louis Washkansky receives the first human heart transplant.
In history, in 1877, the American inventor Thomas Edison announces his invention of the phonograph, a way to record and playback sound.
December 13th, Tigers, Slow High will be putting on the first blood drive of the year. Giving blood is the gift of life.
This week is AIDS Awareness Week. Every minute, 11 people are infected with this terrible disease. For more interesting facts on AIDS, there will be an information booth in the quad today.
Attention, talented people. Sign up for the Slow High Drama Club's coffee night. Sign-ups are outside the theater. Auditions are Tuesday through Friday, December 3rd to the 6th.
Hi, my name's Naran. I was in Egypt this summer. I didn't personally see any protests while I was there because my dad was really worried about us even being in Egypt in the first place, but I did sense the tension because I was so used to Egypt being the type of country that over the summer people are staying up all night, like, having fun. You could, like, see people enjoying themselves. But this year, it was like the streets were, like, quiet by, like, 10.
Improv is, like, the purest form of theater. You just think of things off a whim. So you just, like, let your mind be free and be funny. How's it going?
Hi, I'm Dana. I'm a sophomore, and I am here in Ceramics 2 today. I decided to choose this class because I had tried Ceramics 1 last year, and I really enjoyed it, and I like it because I don't take a lot of artsy classes normally.
Second year for Coach Decker, she had her plays ready to play. I mean, like, you saw LeBron, Kobe, Michael, Larry out there. We got Dylan, Dante, Sam, Blaney, Andrew, Chase, Sam, Chai. Everyone's balling for us. That's how we got the W against Northern Bakersfield.
Stay classy, Tigers.
See you tomorrow.
Last cafeteria is serving barbecue chicken pizza, chicken soft tacos, apple chicken salad sandwiches, veggie sandwiches, and spur subs on freshly baked Kaiser rolls.
Have a great weekend.
Five,
see you later.
Three, two, one.
I just wanted to say one thing. I didn't say that this is all live. So we're broadcasting live. It's not pre-recorded. So that's part of the excitement and the intensity of it. And so I think they're doing a great job. Anyway, I'm proud of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I can echo Cherie's comment about I've been in many classrooms whenever the announcements are on and the kids are just glued to the screen because there's a streaming issue and many days it works perfectly, but there's that odd time where there's a hiccup. I've been on the set a few times myself, and it's quite an experience because you are live and you're just seeing all these cameras there. Our next group that we'd like to recognize is our FFA group, our group that just won the national championship in Novice Parley Pro, and to do them real justice, I want to introduce an amazing teacher who leads by example every single day, is Mrs. Anna Bates.
Thank you for having us here. I can't explain how amazing these kids are, and I know we were just speaking earlier about trying to show the rest of our school and our staff and even the parents. I know some of them, or a lot of them, are here tonight, what these kids do and how amazing they are. And until you see them actually do it, you won't understand. But I know that from the time they sat here and you started your meeting, they were probably trying to critique whether you were following the proper protocol or not. So that's why I was looking back at them, and they were winking because they're like, okay, they approved the minutes. And I know that they're probably wondering how the whole satellite thing works in the voice vote and all that jazz. So they know. So they're amazing. We went to nationals for the second year in a row and continued our title. And I know that the rest of the country is worried about this next year. They're like, what are they doing? I wonder if they'll be back again. So without further ado, there are seven of them. They are now sophomores. They started this journey over a year ago as freshmen, and they're... And so over a one-day span, we flew all the way there, and these kids have memorized, practiced, and done all kinds of things to get where they are. And so they came home with a lot of plaques, awards, recognition, and they continue to get recognized for this, as they should. And while I'm up here, I would like to thank both Catherine Eisendrath Rogers and behind me, Mrs. Robella for accompanying us on our wild trip to Kentucky and driving all over the world and back for these kids. So I think that they have a great reference as to how hard these kids work. So I love doing this, and they're a pretty nice group of kids, I guess. They've all grown, like, a lot. So I don't know what else to say other than I'm super proud of them, and the rest of our school and our community is as well. So thank you for having us here tonight to recognize them.
Before we allow the students to leave, it's impossible to do this job without amazing parents and support of the community, but most importantly, the biggest difference maker is, you guys would all agree, is the teacher. And you are truly blessed to have an amazing instructor. And so Mrs. Bates, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but actually you were recognized by the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Organization as the Teacher of the Year, and Dr. Prater is going to speak to that right now.
We all know as educators that that's fine too. We all know as educators how critically important teachers are to the lives of our kids and to the community in which we live. And Mrs. Bates exemplifies that in every possible way. I remember when I first became superintendent, I received a phone call from Mrs. Bates inviting me to do a home visitation with one of her students, or to one of her students' classes. And I said, "You do home visits?" She said, "Yeah, every year, my freshman class, I want to get to know the families of the students I teach in the homes that they live." And I was absolutely so excited to hear that. And so I actually joined her. And turns out that we sat in the living room of this wonderful family. They were kind of interested in knowing that the superintendent showed up to their door unexpectedly. I had a wonderful opportunity to see Mrs. Bates interact with the family and probably even the dog, I believe, was there. And it was fantastic. It is what we're about in San Luis Coastal, and Mrs. Bates deserves this award. Now, there are four things that I'd like to offer her. I'd like to acknowledge her with this plaque from the county's San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. It's a wonderful plaque you can put on your classroom wall or your kitchen wall, and this is for you being the 2013-14 Santa Lucia Teacher of the Year. This is from our county of San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, certification of recognition for this honor and award. You're going to have all kinds of really great things. This right here is from our U.S. Congresswoman Lois Capps, acknowledging the same. You're all over the place. And then finally, our Assemblyman Kacho Ashajian, and he's doing the same. So you're well known, you're famous, you're famous, and now we're famous. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Great job. And again, thank you for allowing us to give you a little insight into some of the things that are going on at San Luis High this year. Thank you for your time this evening.
And thank you, Mr. O'Connor, and thank you, and congratulations to Ms. Bates and to the FFA and TNN and all the wonderful things that are happening at San Luis High School. We have up next the audit report, and presenting that will be Julie Lang.
And Brian.
Yeah, and Mr. Pinkerton.
I'm just going to jump in front just really quick and just to commend Julie and her department in terms of the audit. If you had a chance to go through it and look at it in terms of, once again, a really very good audit with, I think, no findings, positive, everything was great. And so I could say that the past 6 months and working, has it even been 6 months? 4 months maybe. But working with the business department, it's, they do a great job, And they really, in terms of following rules, procedures outlined, and so this report basically...
continue to meet its required reserve percentage. On page 57, there were some audit adjustments noted in relation to the charter school component unit. These adjustments are done because Bellevue Santa Fe reports on a cash basis and does not recognize accruals. Therefore, every year they have to post those adjustments at year end to bring them into an accrual basis. And we're actually working with them to start reporting those accruals. No findings, significant deficiencies, or material weaknesses related to the financial statements, federal compliance, or state compliance were noted. The federal program they tested this year was the special education cluster, which had no findings or non-compliance. There is a list of state compliance issues on page 73, if you'd just like to see what the state required the auditors to cover. There wasn't anything terribly new in that. Some of the main things that they do cover are attendance site testing, instructional minutes, and class size reduction. And on the last page, attached at the back of the report, is the management letter, which has one comment regarding the ASB revenue potentials being performed at Los Osos Middle School, and that has been addressed and won't be taken care of. And then he says, lastly, we would like to thank everyone at the district and its sites for being so helpful throughout the process, and we understand that this is not always easy to accommodate us, and we appreciate the efforts of all your employees. And that's it. And if anyone has any comments or questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Yes, Walter.
Thank you, Jim. Julie, I just want to make sure I understood you correctly. Are you all working with Bellevue Santa Fe for them to move to an accrual basis from a cash basis, or you work with them to help them make the adjustments so that they can report for the audit?
At the moment, both. We're trying to get them to an accrual basis. There were some things that they missed last year, so now they're making adjustments to their beginning balances and their balances for this year. It's basically just what year are they reporting it, so it's not really a finding or anything. It's just they need to make an adjustment to their balances because they reported something this year that may have actually come in last year. Did that answer
your
question?
And I would just like to acknowledge yet again that we're happy that we can include Bellevue Santa Fe in our audit so that we can help us defray some of their costs since they have essentially the same audit requirement that we do. And my only other comment is that there's always something with ASB funds. I mean, it's never been serious. I suspect it's the realities of the secondary education day, but it did not look like it was significant. It looked like it was more adjusting accounting and receipt procedures. Is that right?
That is correct. And we had a great ASB meeting last year. We didn't get around to it this year. We may do that again in the spring. But I think that for most school districts, that is the case. That's where you find they deal with so many transactions that it's tends to be a little overwhelming, I think, for them.
And that's probably a good sign.
Yes.
We have level of participation. Thank you, Julie, and I see no reason, on just my opinion, to have the auditors come to the next meeting. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, and then Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Mrs. Lang, I just wanted to, on a point of clarification on the form. It appeared in the report that there was a particular form they wanted Los Osos Middle School to use the ASB there. And is that form something all schools are currently using? So we are familiar and we have that form and it's readily available.
Yes, it is. It's something that the auditors look for. It's called a revenue potential form.
Okay.
And they are supposed to use those when they're having fundraising events.
Okay, so yeah. And when you say getting together with all the ASBs, so at the beginning of the school year, we try to get that information out to all the,
yes,
the student organizations.
Right.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, thank you very much, Julia. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to note, I looked at the pie chart, and the part of the pie that I would really like is the instruction part, because it makes up about 69% of our expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get enough pie at Thanksgiving. So. But more importantly, I was very impressed with the fact that administrative costs are only 4% of our budget. And that's not the piece of the pie I want, because it's too little. But I thought it would be really important to note that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I got out of this is that the state still owes us $8 million in deferred costs. Some of those are one-time money, and some of those are money that we should have been receiving on an annual basis. And it's a lot of money. It's about what we've cut over the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
So there was those.
Anyway, that's
I think we do have a lot of the forms online. As a matter of fact, we've got the entire, I think it's the FICMAT guide for ASBs in a PDF form. So all of the ASBs have that. They can use that. They can do searches on things. I gave them a little summary sheet, too, on some of the things they really need to be careful of.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, moving on. We are now at, I believe, oh, wait a minute, we are at public comment. Do we have to take action on this? We just, later, thank you. Okay, on the consent agenda, thank you. All right, so we are now at public comment, do we have any, okay, then I don't know that I need to go through the ground rules. Do we have anybody who would like to speak to the board? And we have no forms. Okay, so I believe we can move to item 4.01, board organization, and I will entertain at this time nominations for president of the board for 2014. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. This past year has been a very eventful and somewhat difficult one for the board and for the district. And I am proud of the way we've handled ourselves and the decision-making that we've done. I'm grateful to Mr. Millar and to Mr. Quesenberry for their leadership and guidance. And I am pleased to nominate Jim Quesenberry to be president of the board for 2014.
So we have the nomination of Jim Quesenberry and by Mrs. Roger, and a second by Mr. Unger. Is there any discussion? Yes, I will accept the nomination. Are there? I think I can close nominations now. Yes. Okay. So this requires a roll call vote, since Mr. Millar is attending this online, I suppose.
So. Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Mrs. Sheffer.
Yes.
Mr. Quesenberry.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman, and Mr. Millar.
Enthusiastically, aye.
Thank you.
Mr. Quesenberry is elected president unanimously.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Already in the seat of power. Right.
I appreciate the trust you've placed in me, and I hope to live up to your high expectations. So we are now need a motion or open nominations for the clerk of the board for 2014. So, any nominations?
I would like to nominate Ellen Sheffer.
Nominations by Mr. Unger for Ellen Sheffer, and the second is by Mr. Buckman. Are there any other nominations? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we will go to the vote.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers? And Mrs. Sheffer is elected clerk unanimously.
And congratulations, Ms. Sheffer, and we no one has to change their place on the board here tonight. We are now to the presentation, well, to the outgoing president. And he's here. At least his voice is somewhere in the air here. And we have a very handsome, speaking of portraits, handsome photograph.
I wonder where you might have gotten a handsome portrait.
Well, Mr. Millar, this is Dr. Prater speaking on your behalf. I'm looking at your portrait that Mrs. Holmes put together for you. It's lovely. In recognition of you, our outgoing president, and in recognition of your distinguished service, serving as our president of the Board of Education during actually three terms, 2003, 2009, and 2013. In recognition of that, we, our district, will donate on your behalf to all of our district's preschool programs the book The Big Boss by Marla.
But I will be back soon. I want to thank Kim Holmes and Sharon Hawk for the selections, particularly The Big Boss, but The Big Boss is not a reference to me and my previous term. It's actually a baby newly arrived in a family, which kind of touched me because of my almost one-year-old grandson, who is the big boss in my daughter and son-in-law's family. But I especially appreciate Sharon tracking down the mock trial book. I think it'll be a wonderful addition to the PB library. We have a great team getting together this year, and I've always enjoyed working with staff and the students at PB on that. It's been a very interesting year. We could not have accomplished the things we did and resolved some of the tougher issues that we did without the support of this really highly functioning board. I appreciate all my colleagues. Whenever I attend the California School Boards Association meeting, I gain a new appreciation of just how well our board and our superintendent and administrative staff function, and just what an excellent district we are that is being guided to become better every day for all of our students. And I appreciate the acknowledgement, and get back to work while you leave there all night.
Thank you, Walter. We are going to move. Yes, we have some. Yes, Marilyn.
Well, I just wanted to say one comment. Walter, are
yes,
you there?
Ma'am.
I just wanted you to know that after Dr. Prater's presentation, we all stood for you. And I know that you
can't. Oh, thank you.
You can't see it, but we stood and applauded you. I want you to know that in your heart.
I appreciate that, Marilyn, very much. Now you guys get back to work.
We're about to do that right now. Thank you, Walter. Okay, we are about to adopt or at least discuss the 2014 management calendar. And Dr. Prater, you are up.
Yes, I am excited to share this with you because, as you all know, effective school years begin with effective backward planning. So identifying our meeting dates well into the next year, as well as our retreat timeframes. And so that's what this calendar represents. It represents next, starting in 2014, in January, our meeting dates. There are a few things that I've done or that we've done. One in particular is you'll notice in orange on the calendar there is the traditional July board retreat. But additionally, it should be noted that that CSBA at the conference, they've made it very clear in their recommendations, and I happen to think it's a wise decision, is to have at least two board type retreats in the year, for a variety of reasons. And so what I've done in for your consideration is beyond the July 15th board retreat, I put in a Since we only have one board meeting scheduled in January, I put a board workshop or retreat on January 21st for your consideration. And I do believe we have enough material to discuss, and certainly with LCAP and the planning, the budget planning process that we have in front of us, it would be probably a worthwhile time. So I put that to you for your consideration. This particular calendar schedules us out for board meetings all the way through January 2015. So I leave this to you for your action.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. I just would like to remind everyone that the calendar is flexible and may be changed as needed throughout the year. Is there any discussion or changes requested to the calendar?
Yeah, I'm glad that Dr. Prater brought that up. We had a discussion about it, and I strongly think that CSBA has recommended it. I think this year, again, we are facing tremendous items that we probably should talk about, and I always find it to be a very good time and a very good discussion. So thank you, Dr. Prater, for following up on the recommendation. I wholly support having another board retreat.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, Kim, the only request I have is when we adopt this, could you put this either in the Friday notes or send me a hard copy so I can transfer it to my electronic calendar? Thanks. And then I guess I'll go ahead and move the adoption of the calendar.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I'd love to second it. Chris, are you including?
All right, we're moving to item 4.04, which is the appointment of board reps. Dr. Prater.
Yes, each year during this meeting, the board selects representatives to each of these areas: the Central California School Finance Authority, or CCSFA, currently held by Mrs. Sheffer; the SLO County School Boards Association, currently held by Mr. Quesenberry; the interest-based bargaining liaison, presently for CSEA, is Dr. Catherine Eisendrath Rogers, and for SEIU, it's Mrs. Roger. And currently, we have Mr. Buckman representing Region 9C delegate for CSBA, and our own Mr. Unger, the CSBA vice president. So those are those four areas of Central CCSFA, SLO County School Boards, interest-based bargaining. The two areas are up for appointment.
Are there any board
yes,
Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar.
I would be happy, now that I have more spare time, to volunteer for either of the positions that you and Mrs. Shepherd currently hold, since you're going to have additional time commitments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Millar. Yes, I was just going to ask if there are any board members that are serving in these roles that would like to step down, or I'll be glad to give up the county school position to you, Mr. Millar.
I'll be happy to do it, Jim, if it pleases the board.
Is there any? Yes, Dr. Eisendrath Roger.
So we'll just talk about this. Is that okay? Okay. So Ellen had previously, Mrs. Shepherd previously expressed an interest in sitting on the CSEA negotiations. And so she and I had a sidebar on this over the weekend, and we'd like to switch those positions if that's still okay with you, given your responsibilities that you're taking on with the board.
Can you tell me how many? I am interested in serving in that capacity, but it depends on how many meetings and that sort of thing.
And that depends on how it goes. With the, yes. So we're taking.
So we have the letter.
It's hard to know. I mean, right, Mr. Pinkerton, maybe, or Mr. Robinette could.
We will probably begin our negotiation season with CSEA in January, and the meetings are typically held in the afternoon from roughly 2 or 3 till 5 in the evening. And it can go anywhere from two or three meetings if things are settled, or it can drag out for months. It's hard to know, but it's usually a very pleasant experience negotiating with our classified unions and their afternoon meetings.
If you'd like to postpone this till next year, or I'd be happy to continue in that role. I mean, I just wanted to offer that to you since you had expressed an interest. So either way is fine with me.
You had indicated some time issues of your own.
It's okay, really. No, we can leave it this way.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. We didn't have a chance
no
to discuss
change.
That.
No change.
No change.
You know. So I don't know if any the Central California School Financing Authority is meets a few times a year for approximately 5 minutes each time. So I suppose I could go ahead and continue in that for another year because it is not a big time commitment.
Mr. Buckman, are you? You're moving towards your microphone.
Yeah, there. I just want everybody to understand. I'm up for election, so my appointment to it's not an appointment to CSBA. It's an elected, and I get to get elected from all the school boards in the county. So I'm good. Got my fingers crossed. I think I've done a good job. So
I'm sure you have. And so yes, Mrs. Rogers.
Well, I have been the board delegate to SEIU negotiations for some time now, and it's something that I enjoy. I'm wondering if anyone else has a particular driving interest to do it. If not, I would be happy to continue to do it.
I have a mild interest, not driving. I think it's more important that you do it. Sometime in the future, perhaps, I would like to do it. Not this year.
Well, I don't want to continue to do it at the expense of someone else. So, Jim, really?
No, it's not at my expense at all.
Okay.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Appointments are made unanimously.
Okay, well, we can move on. Since we now know which boards we're going to be representatives to, we have received one email from the director of Trivium Charter School, who spoke to the board on November the 19th. And I also received an email, I don't know how many of other board members received one, from Sharon Haupt regarding a study on freshmen in college and their need for research skills and to learn how to research in a college setting, and what implications that might have for credentialed librarians at high schools. So I just wanted to mention that. We have received those two pieces of correspondence. Mr. Unger.
I wanted to ask if, based on Mr. Millar's request earlier, that we could move 9.03 ahead of 7.01. That would be the Avila School property CC&Rs. Is that correct, Mr. Millar?
You know, in view of the lateness of the hour back here, I would appreciate that. I was going to leave it a little later in the agenda, but that would be great. And I, of course, my colleagues can handle the rest of this agenda without me, and I won't have to make everybody roll call vote. And I only have a couple of quick questions regarding.
So.
If I could
interrupt, if the interest is to get that agenda item moved up for Mr. Millar's sake, the public hearing section is anticipated to take about 30 seconds, given the audience that we don't have.
That's fine.
But you do have two items in Section 6 that may take a few minutes, so if Mr. Millar does not want to participate and listen to those, perhaps 9 point, whatever the CC&Rs are, should move up after correspondence.
Okay, and I think that's what you're suggesting, Mr. Unger, correct?
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting, is that we do the 9.03 now, followed by then getting back in the order with 6.01 and moving on down the road that way.
on the condition that we take a 5-minute break or a 10-minute break soon thereafter. So we will move, seeing no objections to Mr. Unger's agenda change, we will move item 9.03, the Avila School CCNRs, to this part on the agenda. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes. So Ty Green is here, who represents the district in terms of our Avila properties and what's happening there. And so as a matter of just process, we like to update the board on anything that's happening with that project and what's going on. And so in this case, there were some changes to the CCNRs that needed to be made. And so Ty is here to talk about that and what those changes are and the effects.
A little taller than I am. Good evening. The way this comes about, these CCNRs, is where several years ago we entered into a development and lease agreement with Shiraz Development for the Avila property. One of the conditions that we talked about in the lease is that they have to come up with a set of CCNRs, and that's actually required too because they are also subdividing the property. We approved a subdivision map. And so these CCNRs were prepared by the Shiraz folks and submitted to the county and finally approved by the county. One of the things the county asked for was that the school district be, because they're the property owner, they be a party to the CCNRs. So they brought the CCNRs to me. I reviewed them in connection with our development and lease agreement to make sure they were consistent. And my number one concern, as I put in here, that we're not responsible for anything in these CCNRs unless we actually take over the project. Because this is on a ground lease, we really don't have anything to do with it other than own it and collect money. So our interest under these CCNRs will be silent unless and until the actual lessee goes defaults on his lease and we step in and take over. So that's kind of the background of where these came from. And they're kind of operational documents for the homeowners, the residential lot owners out there. That was one of the issues, is these are a little bit different than the typical CCNRs because they don't own the lot. They only have a leasehold interest. So we had to deal with that a little bit. That was a little unclear when it came to me. But I think that's been corrected. So any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah, I have a couple, Jim.
Okay, Walter, go ahead.
Ty, I noticed there's some affirmative duties on the part of the owner, which under the CCNR is either the, clarify it for me. Is it the lease? Is it our developer, or is it the leasehold owner?
It's the owner under this is, and that they have the lease. The insurance are supposed to have under the lease.
Okay. So, any liability that might accrue from a failure of the owner to carry the required coverage will go to the developer.
Right, because we require under our development lease agreement with them that they keep insurance in place, which I believe is even broader than what they've got in here.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Ty. That's all the questions I have.
You're welcome. Anybody else? Okay.
Seeing no questions, what we'll do is we need a motion here to approve the CCNRs for the Avila School project.
I want to go to the public, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Walter, is there any public comment on the Avila School CCNRs? Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion by the board?
I would make a motion to accept the CCNRs.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. Any further discussion? All right, we will go to the vote then.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? The CCNRs are approved by San Luis Coastal for the Avila School property unanimously.
Thank you. And Mr. President, if I may, I'd like to sign off. I appreciate Mrs. Holmes and Bob from AGP in helping me arrange this for a technically not very savvy guy, and I will see you all soon.
Thank you for your attendance, Walter, and have a good night.
Okay. Good night.
I think at this point it would be good for us to take a Well, let's be honest. Let's call it a 10-minute break, and we'll all be back here at 7:25. We'll come to the dais or the what have you. We'll continue. Okay. So we are at item 6.01, and that's Mr. Pinkerton with the budget business and budget update.
Yeah, quick state of the budget for the board. I have to tell you, I was really pleased with attending the CSBA conference last week, and I felt the sessions were really good, very informative. It was just all around, I think the entire experience was a really positive one for me, and from a budget standpoint. There were many sessions on budget and finance and bonds, and I definitely learned a lot by attending them. Some of the key things that kind of to come away from was a couple of things was the SF Squared luncheon, as well as from the budget sessions I went to. And what I find is that in my new role as a CBO is that you almost become pessimistic about the economy and what's happening. And so you have this state of mind where you're constantly like, okay, the economy is good. Things look good in the state of California. There's extra money. Next year looks like it's going to be another positive year, so they're going to have some more one-time funds, and it's great. But then you go to another one, and they say, now realize that since the Civil War, there's only been, you know, we've never gone over like 5 years of actual recovery, and we're currently in our fourth year of recovery. So it's this constant state of concern and worrying about the economy and things. And so definitely for me, it's just keeping the eye on the ball, making sure that that we're aware of what's happening with the state economy as well as our budget. We're going to have our first interim tonight, which we'll go through, and I'm sure there's questions, which we'll be happy to answer. But overall, definitely, I would just say that the state economy is definitely doing well. There's more reserves than they thought. And so that said, it seems like the governor is being careful about not giving those funds into the LCFF as ongoing funds, that they're looking at using some of those extra funds that are coming in as more one time. So hopefully to pay down deferrals for a lot of our districts that are surrounding us and throughout the state, that's a big thing for districts. And then it would be very interesting.
The SBA provided to its members throughout the state of California. I was especially proud to see each of our school board members, our trustees, that our community elected, so engaged in their own professional development. So I appreciated that. Of note, though, it was very nice to see Mr. Chris Unger announced in front of 2,000 people as our CSBA's newest vice president. Yeah. It is good to know that San Luis Coastal is well-positioned and prepared to embrace the Common Core state standards, the new Smarter Balanced assessments that are coming, and the professional training and support for our staff required in order for our students to thrive in the coming years. Among the many sessions at this year's conference, there were two dynamic keynote speakers that I'd like to just briefly discuss and share with you, Dr. Jane McGonigal and Professor Yang Zhao. Dr. McGonigal is a professional game designer, entrepreneur, and highly sought-after consultant for organizations who struggle with the rapidly changing world of technology. Her book, Reality is Broken, Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. McGonigal suggests that the current generation requires something very different than the traditional public school system and the public school classrooms are accustomed to. She believes that gaming, in particular, can become the instrument for change in our schools and can actually become the solution for disengaged and disillusioned students and probably teachers. Yang Zhao is a Chinese immigrant and professor at the University of Oregon. He has designed schools that cultivate global competence, developed computer games for language learners, and founded research and development institutions that explore innovative educational models. He shared that the current testing environment in schools will not improve the innovative spirit and skills required for success in the 21st century. Rather, he suggests that cultivating the humanities, liberal and performing arts, will have a far greater impact on our students' generation as global citizens. Zhao suggested that de-emphasizing testing and emphasizing entrepreneurship through creative learning environments is the best approach for our nation to return to its great roots. In summary, both keynote speakers were focused on entrepreneurship, creativity, and exploration of the human spirit. Both presenters considered our current approach to educating kids to be flawed in the United States, especially with regard to standardized testing and the traditional classroom model. Both of them see our world rapidly changing, and therefore they see us adapting to new systems, expectations, and models for delivering and measuring learning. Both McGonigal and Zhao had important things to say and provided great possibilities for our consideration, especially as we refine our own educational model through the LCAP process in the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Painter, for that concise summary of so much that went on there. I appreciate it. We are... Mr. Buckman has a comment. Yes.
Thanks, Dr. Painter. I'm not sure. I think all of the board may have walked away with this as we all attended important sessions on the big changes that are coming up. But one of the things that came through to me, and maybe the most important thing that I learned at this conference, was LCFF and the role that they want the public to play in this as the district determines how this money is going to be spent. And in my mind, I was referring to it as we need to go beyond the normal suspects and PTA and DLAC and those and reach out further into our community. And I found that very valuable. In fact, we as board members get the EdCal, which is ACSA's weekly newspaper. And the lead article today in the most recent issue was an EdSource poll, and the first question, people did not know what LCFF was. When they did know what it was, the huge majority of them wanted to be involved. And so I'm hoping that we're going to be moving towards that.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, and I would second what Mr. Buckman said. One of the things that I heard loud and clear from every speaker was this is a make it or break it moment for education in California. And this is our opportunity to demonstrate that school boards and local communities can control what they believe is important for their kids and the learnings that they, the things that they believe are important for their kids to learn, and how that
on some of the traditional groups that we go to for information and for input. Is that what
yeah,
I hear?
That's what I heard at CSBA. So we know we have people that are involved. So we have the PTAs, the DLAC, the ELACs, and the booster clubs, and the people that show up at the meetings already. And my sense was, and what I walked away with, is that the state is going to be looking for us to go much deeper into our communities. And so I have full faith in the staff to find those organizations and ways to attract those people to the table. But as Chris said, it is really something the state's going to be looking at. And if we don't do it, Chris is right, the state will take it away. And this is a great chance for us to have the local control we need.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion? All right, now we are looking at the public hearing for the CSEA reopener proposal and the board's reopener proposal for CSEA. Mrs. Newland, would you come up and we will open the public hearing. And is there anyone here who wishes to address the board on this matter? If so, you know, come to the podium and give your name. Okay. So I will close the board hearing on the CSEA reopener proposal, and I'll open the public hearing on the board's proposal for CSEA. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board on this matter? Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing. Thank you, Mrs. Newland. Okay, we are now on item 8.0. This is on resolutions, a positive certification or certificate of adequate funding, first interim report. Mrs. Lang and Mr. Pinkerton.
So I'll get started again. Julie's going to actually go through the first interim together, but a couple of things I had, and Kim's going to put something up. But so new CBO coming into a new process, first interim, right? And so for me, it was looking at a budget from the start to this first progress report, basically. And what we know as a board is that, as we've said and preached over and over again, the budget is a constantly changing process. And so that said, there were some key things, and one of them was the fact that, you know, when I looked at the numbers and you look at the documents, it is the fact that not only did our revenues go up, and there are reasons for that as it goes through, but also our expenditures had increased. And so that was a concern of mine, that, you know, the board had set a budget that had been established. You know, we had gone through 2 years of some pretty severe cuts. And so for us to add things back, or why is that, what are those issues, was something that I wanted to kind of get a better feel for, and why, and those things. So what I did was I had Julie kind of pull up the last 5 years of first interims, because I wanted to see, is this something that was new to me this year that's a change, or is this kind of a process and kind of just a way that we've done business in San Luis Coast over the past 5 years. And so what you'll see is that it's actually pretty similar in terms of the revenues and changes from budget for interim to the difference. And then if you look at the transfers out, expenditures, and kind of the changes that happen. So top is the funds that have come in. So for instance, in 08-09, the budget was $69 million. We ended up with $72.8 million. Expenses, $69 million. Ended up first interim at $77 million. And vice versa, if you go down 2009, 2010, 10, 11. Last year was a bit of a difference in that we really went through and made major changes to anything in the 11-12 budget, I should say. Anything that looked like it was overly budgeted, cut back, because we were facing mid-year cuts, so we wanted to make sure that, you know, any kinds of things that we could cut back on and look at. What I can tell you is that we're not going to spend $79 million. So though right now, if you look at our expenditures and where they're at in the budget and they're there, that doesn't mean that we're going to expend all those funds. And so there have been some major things that we have received this year that are one-time funds, such as our Common Core funds, $1.4 million. So that's an increase in revenues, but that also is $1.4 million that is an expenditure. Well, we haven't even finished our Common Core plan to expend those funds. So though it looks like $79 million is allocated to be expended, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to spend that much money. And so Julie's here. We can go through the first interim if you have questions and talk about those things. To me, the key things that stood out, which is always, I think, as I get this job and I get more familiar with the budget, is really personnel costs. And so there were some major personnel increases from the first budget when it was adopted to now. And so those were things, our elements, and it was after.
Well, Ryan covered everything, so no. I don't really need to say anything. I think it's under 1 ST. Oh, is that it? Let's hope so. Okay. So, as you know, that's last year's. That would be interesting. I would change my whole presentation. That looked right. Of course, that was last year's, though, wasn't it? And well, I'll just get started. As you know, we present the financial status of the district four times a year at budget, at first interim, second interim, and at unaudited actuals. And tonight we're presenting our first interim, which is our financial status as of October 31st. And I'm happy to report that we are going to have a positive certification for this financial report. It's right there on the top. That's the one. Thank you. There we go. Okay, so we can go two slides ahead now. Okay, perfect. Okay, so our first interim outlook is really, as Ryan said, it's pretty positive. Our property taxes are estimated to increase by about 2.5% over what they were last year. Last year they increased just about 0.4%, and the 2 years before that they were decreasing. So I think we're on a good road to recovery here. We're getting our categoricals as LCFF revenues. These are held harmless. So it's sort of good news because we weren't sure we were going to get them at all. But this is still down from what it would have been had we not gone through this economic recession by about $4 million. Current estimates place our property tax revenues at about $20 million over where we would be if we were an LCFF district this year. So we're still very strongly basic aid. Our CBEDS enrollment is at 7,368, which is pretty consistent with last year, which makes planning much easier when it's consistent. And our personnel costs, as Ryan mentioned, are right where we want them to be, really. It's 85% of revenues and 82% of expenditures. Thank you. As you probably saw in the narrative, we've made a lot of adjustments to the budget since budget adoption. The main things that we did were increase our property taxes. It was an increase of about $500,000. Our carryover amounts have been budgeted now, so that's reflected in revenues and expenditures. We've adjusted our salary and benefit amounts to reflect the more current information that we have. We adjusted our retiree health and welfare amounts, which were actually a little bit lower than we had originally budgeted. And we've added some one-time expenses to the budget, the special ed vans and the transfer to Fund 20, summer school expenses, things like that. And we've also received some new grants, and that's reflected in both revenue and expense. So if we go through and we look at the changes to our revenues, you can see that our total revenues increased by almost $4 million. This probably requires some explanation. The property taxes and LCFF look like they increased by almost $3 million, but this is actually the categorical funds that used to be counted as state revenue. They're now coming in as LCFF revenue, so that's just kind of moving those revenues from state revenue up to where it says property taxes and LCFF. Federal revenues are up mostly because of carryover, but also because we overestimated the amount of the sequestration, so that came in a little bit less of a reduction than we anticipated. State revenues, one reason that's down is because a lot of that money got moved up to the property taxes and LCFF. We also made some adjustments to our lottery revenues, and we actually ended up receiving some money that we weren't expecting from last year's deferrals. And local revenues include some grants that we got. We got a grant from Cuesta College, and we received that bus replacement grant. And then, as you know, local revenues continue to go up throughout the year as we receive fees and donations. Then when we're looking at our expenditures, you can see that our in our multi-year projections, you can see that we added a column for our unaudited actuals because we kind of wanted to see how our first interim compared to how we ended the year last year. And our revenues are up. You can see that our salaries are down, which is where we wanted them to be. They're at the percentage we want now. And if, although we do have a deficit of $2.5 million on here, if we spent 100% of what we have budgeted now, we would still be able to make it through 15-16 and still have our 10% reserve and still be able to designate the things that we need to designate. But most likely, we're not going to spend, as Ryan said, 100% of our what we have budgeted right now. So some of that's going to fall to the bottom line, which is going to increase our ending balance and increase our beginning balance for next year. So it's kind of looking like we'll probably about break even for the next 3 years or so. And so some future considerations we need to think about are, as I mentioned earlier, our categorical funds are being held harmless, but they're also not going to see any increases. I don't think we're supposed to ever get any COLA increases for those, so those are going to be flat. We've received some additional revenues this year for Common Core. We've received some grants from Cuesta and the bus replacement grants, but these are all one-time revenues. These will not continue. We have to make sure that we're only using them for one-time expenses. We're receiving the EPA funds from Prop 30 in the amount of $200 per student, but that will only continue as long as Prop 30 does, and that'll end in 1920. Our special ed funding is expected to grow by growth and COLA, 1.57%. However, our special ed expenditures usually grow as well, so that'll probably be a break-even. And a couple of points of good news is that the economy and the housing market are recovering. Our property taxes are expected to increase for the next few years at least. And I think the first time I may have ever said this, the state is experiencing a surplus right now. So we'll see what they decide to do with that. It'd be nice if we saw some mandated cost money for that. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Before we go to our questions, is there any public comment or any questions from the public? Seeing none, we'll go to the board. I see Ms. Sheffer has her light on, and then followed that by Mr. Unger. Mrs. Sheffer?
My question is, you indicated that some of the money we've received for Common Core we may not spend this year, that those funds will be able to carry over? I mean, even though they're one-time money, they still carry it over into next year?
Yes, into next year. I think it has to be spent by next year.
Okay, so as we further identify our needs, and more specifically, we have the breathing room to spend that money next
year. Yes.
And just on that note, Kim McGrath, Amy Shields, and myself have been doing site visits to every single school, talking to the staffs, getting their ideas, kind of charting all that input. And so we hope to bring the board, I would say, a Common Core plan probably in the month of January, February, with an idea of how to spend those funds.
Mr. Unger, and then Mr. Buckman, you'll follow him.
So the $4-plus million that's our fair share of the pain, as they say, that was to help us experience the deferrals, right? And since the expectation is that the state will pay back the deferrals within the next, I think it's six to eight years, is there any chance in your crystal ball that share of the pain will diminish as the deferrals go down? What do you guys think? I'm asking you to prognosticate on something you may not be able to.
And so it's kind of an interesting thing, because when you listen to I go to the school services information and we hear things, what they say is that if the state starts coming up with categoricals again, mm-hmm. and moving away from this, then we'll know that this has kind of been a failure. This whole idea of LCFF and LCAP, that if they start putting regulations on funds again, then that's going to be a problem. Now, for us, if they start putting funds into specific categoricals, such as transportation again, that I could see as something where, as a basic aid district, we may get some of those funds, because they're going to be outside of the LCFF plan and attack. But other than that, I don't believe that we're going to see them probably add to basic aid to that 12-13 level that they've established. I would be surprised if they added anything to it.
Yeah, maybe we should just stop talking about it. I mean, if we're never going to get it back and we can't count on it anymore, then you know, it's just, it's illusory, I guess. Yeah. And then the other thing, and it makes me feel better to hear that when I compare the difference between our adopted budget and I look at what our adopted budget was, and I'm trying to was that a slow erosion of spending, you know, every year being spending down a little bit more until we got past that. So am I understanding that right?
Yes. Yeah. The 2.5 million, the least amount, I think, over the last 5 or 6 years that we have had fall to the bottom line was about 1.5 million. And the most has been over 5 million. So I think we're safe to say that we'll see at least $2 million fall to the bottom line.
And by fall to the bottom line, you mean remain unspent and carried over?
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
So if I can piggyback on what Chris just said, I had a question about carryover also. And it was explained to me once that the carryover is school site funds, that they've done such a good job of saving us money that there's $1 to $2 to $5 million sitting at the bottom line at the end of the year. Is there any, it just seems if we're going to budget that for them, that it maybe it's time for them to be able to spend it. So is there any plan or any action that we can take to work with them?
We have made reductions to the site budgets over the past 2 years, and so it'll be interesting to see how long that carryover lasts. But there's also things like, you know, at Del Mar, for 6 years, they raise funds for the sixth grade trip or things like, I mean, there's a lot of donation funds. There's things like that. That's part of those site carryovers. So I mean, there's a whole cadre of different types of funds that are included in that. That said, we are moving away from a categorical-based situation like EIA funds. There is no more EIA funds. So that is just funds that the district has. That we have been giving to school sites based on their free and reduced lunch count. If they meet a certain percentage, we've allocated those funds out. And so those will be things that I think through that LCAP process that we're going to have to look at. How are we spending our funds? Where is it going? What, you know, how are those funds being expended? Because as Julie said, so it's $20 million over the LCAP amount. And so that said, we do, and we can look and see what our LCFF is. Right now, today, if San Luis Coastal was an LCFF district, we can see how much money we would get. We would also be able to see how much of those funds would be supplementary funds, which are focused on our free and reduced lunch students, our foster homeless youth, and our ELs. So I think through our LCAP process, we're going to want to really show how we are allocating our funds, and that we are spending our supplementary amount, whatever that may be, on those students, and to really make that clear and transparent and get it out there. And I believe what the board's going to find is we spend much more than that. But it's still, I think, good for us to share that and to make sure everyone understands. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the whole LCAP process in a minute. It's one of the other board items tonight.
So if I could just follow up on. So I had a brief conversation with Julie today. I don't know if this is the right place to bring this up, but there's, I think it's about $1.8 million in the cafeteria fund.
Textbook fund. There's about $1 million in the cafeteria fund.
$1 million in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And I know, I understand that we've been approving, I think we did a freezer truck and an oven, but that's still a lot of money. So are there future plans for that?
So one plan would be to figure out whatever expenses we can charge to that fund.
Yeah.
And so we just put a separate monitor over at Laguna Middle School to kind of chart the electricity that the cafeteria is using. And so that now it's about $22,000 a year that we'll now be able to charge back. And so we're constantly looking for ways to increase revenues. And so Jeff Guy, who's here, is, you know, hate to see him go, but he's been great in terms of looking at different things. We're about to hopefully realize some really substantial savings with the city of San Luis Obispo with our water and sewer rates. So that was just approved at the last city council meeting, is going to be coming forward. So there are things like that we need to continually look at and try to find. We're going to do the same, like with the electricity, in terms of the cafeteria fund. We're also going to be looking at our custodial charges as well.
Okay.
And so, so my last thing on this cafeteria fund is it's a lot of it's funded by free and reduced lunch and those parents that sign up. And I know that we make a strong effort, but in these economic times, I think there may be some people that were above the line for getting free and reduced, and I hope that we're reaching out to that segment of the community that never really qualified.
And there's actually an item tonight for the board's approval, I believe, in one of the purchase warrants for a new program, computer program, that actually does an online process of getting that out to more parents and informing more parents. So
thank you, sir.
And Kathy Chavez is the one who is spearheading that with IS&T.
As those numbers increase or decrease, I mean, we're seeing what we saw a decrease in ADA already. So, 30% of those kids, if they're free and reduced, that would mean the concentration grants would be reduced by that number as well. So I just think those are more fluid figures.
Sure.
If there's no further discussion, I'll request a motion to adopt the resolution and to approve the first interim report. Do we have a motion? We have a motion by Mr. Unger. I'm sorry, by Mr. Buckman. Hello, Mr. Buckman. Yes. A motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any other discussion, questions? Okay. This requires a roll call vote, I believe.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? The resolution passes 6-1 with Mr. Millar absent.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And now we are at the discussion of the Local Control and Accountability Plan, the LCAP plan.
Extending our discussion about the budget. So it's really, I think, the LCAP, it's been an interesting kind of process, like I said, for the state. The governor is really focused on giving local control back to the citizens, to school boards, and really bringing that back. And so it's really going to be interesting to see the LCAP template that comes out, because as Amy Shields has already been to some things at the county, they're already talking about, you know, kind of framing it out, having certain structures, ways to put documents into an LEA plan. And so it's that balance between a structured approach, or are they truly going to let school boards develop a plan with their constituents that meets the needs and really has that local control element. And I would say that the board here did that with the initiatives 3 years ago. I mean, truly, the initiatives is the LCAP. I mean, it is a plan to meet the needs and for all of our students. And so could it be laid out better in terms of the budget, possibly, and the exact numbers? And, you know, we're going to have to relook at accountability standards because of the change with the SBAC and those types of things. Absolutely. But that is, again, if they start to develop categorical funds and place guidelines on some of the budgets that come out, that truly will begin to restrict what I believe Governor Brown is trying to do. So it's really going to be interesting over this next year to see what happens with this process. As Mr. Buckman said earlier, and from all of the sessions and conferences that I've been to, truly the key is getting input, talking to stakeholders, meeting with everybody in terms of, you know, your key constituents, your teachers, and again, adding students to the list, because often I believe we forget and we don't have students as part of this process. But working with your parents, working with your PTAs, your DLACs, your ELACs, all of those groups, as well as, I believe, what we've done some ways already with things like LOMS. Developing kind of a steering committee and getting these outside people from Cal Poly and different groups who may have some really good ideas, really good things for us to consider, and tying them into the process. So what we did as a group is Dr. Prater, Mr. Robinette, the cabinet, Amy and Kim, we all got together and we kind of really tried to put our heads around the process of developing the LCAP. and looking at the eight state priorities, and how can we kind of mesh our current LEA plan, which we still have to do because it's a federal document that we have to continue to do, with our initiatives, with the new state eight priorities with the LCAP, and kind of talking about that and kind of what that's going to look like and how it's going to pan out. Now, the state is going to have a template that's going to come out in January, so that will really guide us in terms of where we're at. But we did want to start this process now. So I'm currently looking at it from the budget end and looking at what do we spend on EL teachers and EL aides and, you know, going through each of the different ways that we really work with our students and the things that we provide. Because as a basic aid school district, we are not receiving more money. So from what we received last year in terms of LCFF or categorical, it's the 12-13 year. So whereas in other districts, they are possibly, and all, to be honest, not all districts are actually receiving more funds, but most are receiving more funds that are considered supplemental funds that are meant specifically for those three groups of students that we talked about. But for us as a basic aid school district, I hope, in what I already know, because I've already started to look at the figures, we spend much more in San Luis Coastal than what would even be just the supplementary amount. And so that would be something that I think, if we have $79 million in our budget, then if it's you know, 11% is what is supplemental funds, well, then maybe that's our gauge in terms of looking at that amount of money that would go towards supplementary funds. So it's just kind of breaking that down, looking at it, trying to be as transparent as possible as we go through. And so we're going to plan to go to all the sites, visit sites, talk to them, and kind of like we're doing with Common Core now, get their insights and probably have a couple public forums, maybe here on the coast, to get as much stakeholder input as possible. And so the key is not necessarily that we don't want people to be in. We would love to have more input. It's just getting those constituents to show up. And so I think Dr. Prater's talked about developing a parent advisory committee with not your PTA leader group like we've had in the past, but more of a broad spectrum of the community. And so maybe that would be a good tie-in. We've made some great inroads with our chambers in Morro Bay and Los Osos and San Luis. And so hopefully I think presentations with them as well would be a positive thing as we go through this process. So that's just kind of the an overview. My hope would be that we would develop an LCAP that would go right along with the budget and that we would be bringing those forward to the board for approval and, you know, and commentary, of course, and discussions and actions, but that they would kind of mesh this year together and that both those processes would kind of happen at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, just one thing that as we're having this discussion that occurs to me is we really value and treasure the initiatives. It may, though, turn out that during the LCAP discussions, we get some pushback from parents, and I think we better be ready for that. Mm-hmm. We better decide how we want to handle that. I would just put that out for thought.
Well, that priority part that I talked about is going to be really interesting because we get used to the way things that we've done things. So after school tutoring with a bus, you know, there's different things like that. Well, could that be a 4G computer with the program on it that the student and the child could take home together and the parent could work with them on it? You know, there's different ways of looking at that, but I think our first goal is really to look at what do we do in San Luis Coastal for our kids? What are all the programs that we currently do? And then have that conversation about, okay, what's working, what's not. Because this year, that is the LCAP plan. It's kind of, what's your budget? How do you lay it out? Are you using enough supplementary funds? And are you meeting the needs of those students? Next year, you have to tie in accountability measures. So that's not part of it this year, necessarily. In the initiatives, the board tied in accountability measures. Now, we're going to have to revisit those because the testing, you know, the state standardized test is no longer with us. And so whether it's the SBAC, whether it's, you know, that really is going to be the key as we move forward, is what are we doing and is it really having the effect that it should have on our students? Because then that priority discussion, I believe, has to happen.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Okay.
Is there any public comment? I didn't see that. Okay, so We are moving on to item 9.02, which is the approval to pay a board member salary for a permissible absence, and those absences are listed as illness, jury duty, other board-related meeting, or hardship. Board members who are absent from meetings unless excused by these for these reasons don't get paid. So there's a motion to approve a payment for Mr. Unger's absence due to an early attendance at CSBA conference as a state delegate, and also for Mrs. Sheffer. Is there a motion to approve these absences?
Yeah, I'll move approval of both absences.
And I'll second.
Okay. So I think we can just all in favor. We don't have to do roll call since Mr. Millar is not here anymore. All in favor for approval of the salary for permissible absences? Anybody opposed? And an abstention, okay. So, Mr. Unger, are you abstaining from both or for, since it's the same meeting?
Yeah.
Same meeting, okay. So, it passes, we have a quorum, 4-0 with two abstentions.
So, regarding the new clarifications that we've received from many legal counsel, we need to announce carefully the results of that vote
by name.
So, the motion passes. With four members voting yes, Mrs. Sheffer and Mr. Unger abstaining, and Mr. Millar absent.
Absent. Thank you. So the motion is made by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any public comment? We didn't ask for that. Do we usually do that? I think we do, right? Is there any public comment on any of the action consent agenda items? Seeing none. All right, so we have a motion, and it's for approval of all the action consent items. Okay. So, and we have a motion and a second. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? So the motion passes. All right, we are now on the advanced agenda. So the advanced agenda is attached, and are there any items the board would like to add to our future work? Mr. Buckman.
Mr. Quisenberry, I'd like to make a suggestion. We recognize the Teach Foundation, and rightfully so, every year, and their donations to the district and to the programs for students. We have other organizations within the district who contribute large amounts of money for the students, and I'd like to somehow recognize them, possibly at a board meeting. Dr. Prater meets with many of those groups once a month, so I'm thinking about PTA, other parent organizations, booster clubs, and other groups that raise funds. Just from personal knowledge, I know some of the PTAs raise over $50,000 a year in our district. So I'd like to just put that out there for the board and see if we can bring them in and at least say thank you.
Do we have any other? You want to place this on the future agenda? Is that correct? The recognition for the other contributors, donations, much like we do with the Teach Foundation.
Yeah, I think we either put it on a future agenda item or let staff look into it and come back with a recommendation, maybe in the Friday memo.
Okay, is that agreeable to staff to do that in a Friday?
I'm all for thanking people that help the schools.
Yeah, I'm all about our PTA groups and booster groups. They work their tails off honoring them, bringing them maybe in the January meeting to acknowledge them for their efforts, or the spring, or I think that would be worthwhile.
Okay, then I'll make the request to make it a future agenda item.
And it's supported by Mr. Unger, and I think most of us are nodding our heads here too. So it'll be a future agenda item. All right. And is there anything else? All right. I believe we have some informational developer fee accounting. It's listed here in my notes. It says informational items are presented to publicize and disseminate information. They do not normally require discussion. And Mrs. Lang, I don't know. I don't see anybody from the public here. I don't know if there's anybody on the board that wants to requires any more information.
Any questions or discussion that you'd like to have about the report? This is something that we're required to do every year.
Thank you, Mrs. Lang. I think we're we're fine. All right, we have reports by board members. Mr. Buckman.
I'm just going to make it real quick. I thoroughly enjoyed myself at the CSBA conference. Mostly this was one of the most exciting with new information. And I may sneeze. I'm sorry, I didn't learn how to avoid sneezing at CSBA. I did take the time to sit with there was a group from CIF that was there. And I did get a chance to sit and talk with them and talk to them about the concussions and the work. And they are sort of out front on this. And let me know that across the state, communities have either gotten local medical folks to come forward and do a baseline test on all athletes and help determine whether a student can go back on the a student player can go back on the field or not. And I know we had a group come present to us, and I'm not sure what happened with that. So
that is our protocol. San Luis Sports Therapy provides our training services, and on our contact sports, we do the pre-concussive screening for
athletes. And that's for all. That's all athletes.
It's all athletes in what the CIF has determined as contact sports. Okay, there might be a couple categories that don't.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
And I just, as Dr. Prater explained, I was elected by CSBA.
Heat-related injuries, which doesn't really apply to us, but also they said that girls' soccer was an area where there was a high frequency of neck injuries because of the developmental stage of the girls' bodies in high school. So to be sure that we're aware of that and that we have appropriate personnel that can handle it at our soccer games as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Any other board reports? I am going to take the opportunity to shamelessly promote the 8th Annual Needs and Wishes Holiday Fundraiser in Los Osos. And it really does sometimes touch our students because the money raised from there goes to the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, to Transitional Food and Shelter, and also to the Slo Nor Clinic. And they wanted me to mention, especially for the parents of young people and people who I guess are very young at heart, that they are having a raffle for an Xbox One and a subscription to Xbox Live for 1 year, and the tickets are only $1, and that is following the Christmas parade in Los Osos this Saturday, and that's from about 10 a.m. Well, that ends usually about 10 a.m. or 11, and the Needs and Wishes will go to 7 p.m. that evening. So come on by. You can find some wonderful Christmas gifts. You can take a ticket on that Xbox, and the money goes to a very good cause. Yes, Mr. Unger wants to add one more thing.
And on a sad note, and Marilyn, I think, knows what I'm going to be talking about, there was a death in our student, not our student's family, but in the family of two of our former students, and that's Donna Sagano, who passed away in October. Donna was a strong supporter of our schools, a volunteer par excellence. She was a yard duty volunteer in the classrooms. Her husband teaches guitar here for the adult school. There was a memorial, and she was our employee at Monarch Grove. There was a memorial service for her on Sunday that was well attended. Lots of good memories and fun things to think about and talk about with Donna. But just also a goodbye to somebody who was a really good friend to schools and kids and Los Osos.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Seeing that there are no more reports, that concludes the business of the meeting. So we are adjourned until January 14th of the new year. And I hope everyone has an enjoyable holiday, and we will see you in 2014.